You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mitchell gets back to make the tackle. Wales still in possession. Created by Shane Williams in midfield. Must be Lee Byrne. Williams. Shane Williams started it and finishes it.
Wales. Welcome to the Attacking Scrum podcast. We're back for a new season. A new season of Pro 14 rugby anyway. The English Premiership is still in last season. And the European Cup is still in last season. Strange times that we live in, and who better to help me navigate these strange times than top journalist, friend of the show, Stefan Thomas. Hi Steph, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you Jed, how are you?
Good, thanks. You were just saying off air that was your first visit to a press box for, for over 6 months. How did you find it?
It was good to be back, and it's better than trying to cover games off the TV. I didn't pick the best game to come back to from a journalistic point of view, that Scarlets game. I had to do about four rewrites because it looked like they were going to win easily, and then Munster came back to draw the game. Then, of course, I managed to rewrite that part, and then bang, they scored a winning penalty and the final whistle. So I was scrambling about trying to change all my copy. So bit of a baptism of fire, but good to be back nonetheless.
If you were looking for an easy night, you probably should have. You would have been more comfortable with the Dragons game, which kind of played out exactly as everyone expected it, really. But perhaps not tipping the 50-point mark. But there we go. Like you say, it's good to be back, and it's good to be back talking rugby as well. And we've got lots to get through this evening or this morning, whenever you're listening to it. And we've got the opening weekend of the Pro 14 to look at. We've also got a Wales squad announcement next week. So we're going to be previewing that and seeing what players has caught Steph's eye, who he'd like to see in there, who we expect to see in there. And we'll round up all the other business from within Welsh rugby as well. But we're going to start, Steph, we're going to do in chronological order. So we'll start Friday evening with Cardiff Blues win away at Zebra. Did you manage to catch that one?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it wasn't the highest quality game, but I think first game of the season out in Zebra, it's probably the worst time to play them, really, because it's the same as the Italians and the Six Nations. They're always toughest first up, and then after they've emptied the kitchen sink, they tend to sort of have heavier defeats as the tournament goes along. And I think that on paper, obviously Cardiff are a lot stronger, but they've slipped up in Italy against both Italian teams on numerous occasions in the past. So I think most important thing is they won the game. I think they made hard work of it. You know, Zebra had a fairly physical pack, but I never felt that Cardiff were ever going to lose the game. They managed the red card Josh Turnbull received pretty well. So all in all, it was a good, nice work from them. They'll have to play better if they want to beat good teams, but win away from home, can't be too displeased with that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You mentioned the red card there, pretty clear cut one for you.
I think so. I mean, I've seen a lot of people on social media rubbish it and say, oh, you know, it's you know, the game's gone mad and all that sort of thing. But look, Josh Turnbull's a clean player. He's not a dirty player whatsoever. There was no intent in it. But I just think sometimes, you know, in the heat of the battle, you know, a player can duck into a tackle or whatever and you go high. You know, a lot of things can happen. But and this is not a judgment of Turnbull, but the letter of the law says, you know, he, a shoulder to the head is a red card. And every professional referee that knows what he's doing would have, you know, the end result would have been the same. It would have been a red card. And I agree with the laws, personally. It's there to protect the player. You know, head shots can be disastrous with concussions and even worse, you know, conditions afterwards. So 100% the right decision and 100% the right law as well, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I have to say that when the first kind of iteration of the new laws came in a few seasons back, you know, we had a few. So I think it was just that adjustment period. I remember Danny Cipriani getting sent off for Gloucester against Munster, I think, someone like that. And it kind of, you looked at it and it looked very much as though a player had run into his shoulder and you thought, oh God, this is just going to be a mess. But I think a couple of seasons in, things have really started to bed themselves in, and it's clear with this. I think if you were to ask Josh Turnbull now what his thoughts are, I think he'd probably agree that it was a red card, and he knows that he takes that risk. He's lined down, he's lined his man up, he's gone in hard. If he hits him in the chest, it's a fantastic tackle. But he, you know, that there's a very small margin for error, and when that happens, you're going to have to pay the consequences, which he did. The other thing I think is actually, and I thought this during the World Cup last year, is it can even up a game, providing there's consistency around it. You know, you can see games that on paper should be one-sided, yeah, you actually end up getting more of a contest out of it. And if I'm honest, I think that's something that rugby has always suffered from, because in football, you know, you can have the odd game where, you know, a Man City is upset by, you know, by, Stoke or Leicester or whoever, but God, they're very dated references. But I think rugby's always kind of struggled with that. The strongest side always wins. And actually, I think, you know, this one, I know people are going to be shouting at this saying you don't want to see 14 versus 15, but on the other occasion, I think it can make for a more interesting spectacle.
I think it can. I mean, we saw it with the Lions in the second test in 2017. I don't think, you know, I obviously haven't got a crystal ball, but I don't think they would have won that second test if Sonny Bill hadn't had that rush of blood to the head. That's probably a poor example, really, because the Lions are great players as well. But I can see where you mean. But obviously, the main reason that those sort of offences are deemed worthy of a red card is to stamp them out of the game and to make it a bit safer for all players. I mean, you're never going to make a game like rugby fully safe. You when you go on the field, you obviously do have to accept that you could get seriously injured, but, you know, obviously they've cleaned the game up a lot, and high shots they got, you know, there's obviously a far greater risk of injury. And as I said, right decision, right rule.
Yeah, you're pointing out the much more important thing about player safety there, which you're absolutely right on. My point was a bit more frivolous, but there we go. It is a byproduct that I have, you know, I've thought has evened up the odd game on occasions. But as you say, Cardiff get off to a winning start. They'll definitely have wanted that. Few players caught my eye, particularly in the back row. I thought Shane Lewis Hughes and Jim Botham in particular had really strong games, particularly when they played large chunks of it. You know, with a kind of a two-man back row, really.
Yeah, I think we'll probably be talking about this later on the show, but Shane Lewis Hughes, I think, is a player that has really caught my eye over the last 18 months or so. James Botham was excellent as well. I think he's got a big future. But when Wayne Piver comes to selecting his squad, I mean, obviously he's picked it already. But when it comes to announcing the squad, I won't at all be surprised to see Shane Lewis Hughes in there. He was obviously in his extended squad for the Barbarians game, didn't play, didn't quite make his cut for the Six Nations, but what I think, when you look across the back rows at the four pro sides in Wales, I mean, obviously, you know, it's well documented the outrageous strength and depth Wales have at open side. Only New Zealand are arguably better than them. in that position. And you look at somebody like Josh McLeod and you're like, yeah, he's a really good player, but he has the same sort of skill set as the other players already in the squad. But what gives someone like Shane Lewis-Hughes an edge is that he brings something different to the other players in the squad. And he's a proper blindside. Now, we got a lot of players that can cover the back row, but he's an out-and-out six. He's athletic, but he's not like an Aaron Shingler type player. He's very physical. Not that Shingler isn't physical, but you know, he's a really powerful, explosive carrier. He's a really destructive destructive tackler as well. He's a good footballer. He's a good footballer as well. Very intelligent player, but it's just that raw physicality that he brings. And I just think Pivac wants to play this athletic game, this wide open athletic game, and people question whether you can play that at test level, and jury's out for me on that. But you get a lot of players who are really talented, like athletes, and their highlight reel, when you put it together, they're brilliant. But often in tight games at test level, they just nullify completely because size matters a lot more at that level. But what Lewis Hughes has got, he's that type of player, but he packs a punch as well. He's not a player that's going to get bullied. He's a player that's going to win the gain line, that's going to knock people back over the gain line. And he's just a player, every collision he goes into, he wants to win. And I just think, yeah, it's early days with him. He'll have bad games, no doubt. But I just think when you look at him and you compare him to the others, Wayne Rice, a fantastic player. Moriarty's a good player. Navidi's sort of 6.5. But he's a different type of player to every other player in the back row, selection dilemma for Wales. So I think I really wouldn't be surprised to see his name in Pivac's squad when it's announced on Tuesday.
Yeah, we're done. I'm sure we'll definitely get onto this in the second half of the show when we look at the squad. But yeah, some really interesting points you've raised there. I think you go back to it's just that gulfing class between club rugby and international rugby is so, so big. And I think particularly when you go from looking at Pro 14 into international. And you're right, looking at Shane Lewis-Hughes, he does have that physicality that you think will equip him very, very well for the test arena. And you look back to Warren Gatland's period in charge, and there were just players that he trusted in those type games. You know, you look at how much he trusted Dan Lydiate for a long period of time, and even the likes of, even in the backs, you know, the likes of Halfpenny you'd always turn to, and I know we're going to talk about him later on as well, but there is something about those players who can perform at the highest level in the tightest games and win you test matches. And there's no denying that Pivac will want to play that expansive game, but there are going to be games that are 12 all with 3 minutes to go, and you've got to be able to close those out. And it's having those kind of players who are able to do that. And I'm not saying physicality is everything to do with that, but it certainly helps when you've got an explosive player who gives you those options. So yeah, he really is one to watch there. I just wanted to touch on the Cardiff backs before we move on to the other games. And Josh Adams continues his outrageous run of form. Again, anytime he gets a sniff, you feel like he's going to get over the try line. Interesting one for me, though, is the centres. And again, regular listeners will know that I kind of had this fascination with Halaholo and Lilo, that I think they're both fantastic players. They are definitely Cardiff Blues' best two centres. But there are some games where I feel they would benefit from a more direct centre alongside one of them. I feel like there are occasions when it can just get a little bit too lateral. And again, I found myself thinking that on Friday night.
Obviously, you know, as you said, Josh Adams, phenomenal player. Don't really need to talk much about him. I think all the viewers know he's a world-class wing. But I can see your point. But I think, Josh Adams aside, I would argue that Ray Lilo is Cardiff Blues' best back. Mm. He's certainly their most important back. That guy is just criminally underrated. Mm. You never hear people, apart from Cardiff fans, obviously talk about him in terms of non-Welsh qualified players. But that guy's had a really good impact. There's a few Cardiff fans who I really respect highly, who actually rate him higher than Casey Laulala, who I thought was a brilliant player. He he does all the basics well. He's very physical, very direct. But it's just his leadership, just his organisational skills as well. and just the way he sort of bosses a game. I think Haleholu is maybe a more talented player, and I think his peak, his best is maybe better than Lilo's best. But my criticism of Haleholu is that he sometimes drifts in and out of games, and maybe he doesn't have as much of an impact on games that he should. When he's at his best, he's fantastic, and I think he'd probably be in the squad as well on Tuesday. But I do see a point. Yeah, I think there might not be the right balance behind the scrum. I think looking at our Cardiff Blues, the one guy that they've really missed so badly for the past couple of seasons has been Gareth Anscombe. When they won the Challenge Cup out in Bilbao, when they beat Gloucester, Jared Evans was the 10, but make no bones about it, Anscombe was the one calling the shots from 15, and they've really lacked something behind the scrum since he's left. But yeah, I do see your point. But for me, Ray Lilo is one of the best overseas signings that they've made.
No, I think you're absolutely right. But as you say, job done for Cardiff Blues. They're on the way with a win, and we'll no doubt be delighted to do that in a game that's a bit of a potential banana skin. Something that I don't think anyone really saw as a banana skin was the Dragons' visit to Leinster. I'll just give you my take on it quickly before we get yours. Again, I went into it with very low kind of expectations. Although it's a strong Dragons side on paper, and certainly stronger than it's been for a long while. I felt like Leinster, off the back of their European exit with a pretty much fully loaded side, or certainly a very strong side, was always going to be a tough order. For me, spirited display in places, but set piece just not good enough. And I found it a bit strange that we just weren't committing anyone to the breakdown. I think if you give Leinster front football, they will absolutely steamroller you. And I don't know, I found the back row selection a little bit strange. I think Harry Keddie's done a really good job for the Dragons, but in a game like that, I would be looking to unleash Basham and just try and snaffle some balls, slow it down, pinch the old turnover and try and catch the opportunist try. But that was my take on it. Steph, what did you think of that game?
When a team gets promoted from the Championship in football, right, I remember years ago, Swansea got promoted and then their first game was Man City away. I think they lost 4-0. And when you get promoted, the games you want to win, you want to win every game, but the games you want to win are games against teams around you on a similar standard to. Like, if we consider the Dragons, this is the first real season where they've had anything resembling a squad that can be competitive. We all like to have a dig at the Dragons and criticise them for results, but the fact of the matter has been that they've never really had a squad that should be doing better than it was doing, but now they have a squad that can do that can improve. So they're still at base camp, and I don't think we should be judging the Dragons on the basis of what they do out in Dublin against one of the greatest non-international teams on the planet, a team that maybe beat a lot of international sides. So when you get promoted from the Championship, you need to win games against teams around you, not against your Man Cities and your Liverpools. So I don't think, I think Dean Ryan would have looked at it as a game where, when you play games like that, it's like playing the All Blacks as well. Even if you have a hiding, one thing it does give the coach is very useful in seeing who's up to it and who isn't up to it. Mm. And what we've found out from the last two games, which they've had they've been slaughtered in, Leinster and Bristol Bears, one thing we have found out is their front five is not good enough. We've looked around the squad, we've seen somebody like Leon Brown, who's fantastic around the park, but, against Bristol, he was, he had his backside handed to him in the scrum, for example, and it's no disrespect, but he's a work in progress in the scrum. So that it's useful in that regard. I don't think that they've recruited well enough in the front five, if I'm being honest. I think Bateman is a decent player, but all in all, I don't think that front five is good enough to take him to the next level. But I think they as we've said before, they've got an excellent back row. They've recruited really well and strengthened significantly behind the scrum. Front five isn't quite good enough. But I thought they were spirited against Leinster. But I think, as Dean Ryan said, they just weren't clinical at all. And whenever Leinster get chances, they're just so ruthless. They put chances away and score tries nine and a half times out of 10. And that was the biggest difference. Ashton Hewitt, phenomenal finish. We won't see a better finish than that all season, I don't think. And he's one of these guys who's like 50-50 to be in the squad. Mm. He's probably competing with maybe Steph Evans and Jonah Holmes for a place. So we wait and see on that. He certainly deserves a cap. But yeah, I just don't think we can be too critical of the Dragons, because ultimately away in Dublin against Leinster isn't the game we should be judging whether they made progress or not.
Yeah, no, fair points in there, and yeah, we'll definitely come on to talk about Ashton Hewitt when it comes to the Wales selection, which we'll be doing a little bit later on. Let's move on to the game that you went to, Steph, again, the Scarlets at home to Munster. Like you said, you had to do a complete rewrite on this one, because it looked as though the result was there, and what was, to me, it felt like a very streetwise performance from the Scarlets to a point, and then it all kind of hinged around that try and the subsequent sending off of Omani. It was an odd one. It's a game I would have expected Scarlets to close out.
Yeah, well, it was a very strange game. I think it was a good game to watch from a neutral point of view. Certainly, I don't think anybody would have saw Munster coming back to win that game. But when I was covering the game, obviously I had a quick look at Twitter to see what people's reactions were. And a lot of the Munster fans, most of the fans were saying, oh, it's all predictable, you know, no plan B from Van Graan. We tried to bully the Scarlets and instead they bullied us. But and the Scarlets pack were outstanding for most of the game. You know, it was probably the strongest pack they've had for years. I thought Blair Thompson was excellent. I think he's going to be an asset for Scotland if he stays fit, that is. I thought Lucy was good. Ken Owens played well. Their scrum was poor in the first half, but it was a lot better in the second when Javen Sebastian came on. But for about 65 to 68 minutes of the second half, I thought the Scarlets pack were bullying Munster. Halfpenny was absolutely phenomenal, 27 points. 9 penalties off the kicking tee, which is actually a Scarlets record. Not a Halfpenny record, by the way. He scored 11 against the Western Force for the Lions in a midweek game. Good pub quiz question there. But
yeah, I like that one. I'm stealing that.
Yeah, but no, you've got to give credit to Munster. What they've got is they got that never say die attitude, and they just never give up. And, you know, you've got to give them huge credit, but the game management from the Scarlets has really let them down. Two games running now. They've been in positions to win two games against Toulon. They should have won that game, and against Munster. And they were 14 points up at one stage, I think. They were in complete control of that game, and they seemed to take their foot off the gas. I thought some decision-making was really, really poor, and Munster made them pay. And usually, we when we talk about the Scarlets, it's always been, oh, they've got great backs, but they've got a real soft underbelly. But I would argue that their pack is a lot stronger than their back line now. They created nothing. They literally created zero all game. Halfpenny was fantastic, obviously, with his boot. And obviously, they were right to go for 3 points when they were awarded penalties. But Munster outscored them 3-0. And, they've scored 0 tries in 2 games now, despite having, at least parity physically against Toulon and Munster. And that should worry Glenn Delaney.
Yeah, I think there are some excellent points in there, and I'd agree with a lot of that. The thing for me is I felt that, yeah, you're right, game management and just some poor decision-making. There's a few things that spring to mind. Gareth Davis' kick in the first half that led to the Munster try was pretty aimless. I think it was Gareth Davis off his left foot. It was a fairly aimless one. There was a moment in the second half when there was a penalty, which there was an advantage for. I think it was Steph Evans put a kick out to the wing, which went absolutely nowhere. If they'd kept the ball in hand and straightened up there, that should have been a try. And likewise, towards the end of the game, there was some turnover ball, which did very well to grab hold of the loose ball, get it back, and Jonathan Davis, no one rates him higher than I do, but I think it was a loose kick over the top that surrendered possession back to Munster. And you just think those are the things that you expect Scarlets to get right, and they have got right more often than not in recent years. And I think those things can cost you, because, yeah, one try for Scarlets in that entire game and they'd have won it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just think as well, and I was a bit baffled with some of the selections. I think the team to start was very strong. But, you know, you look at the bench, right? You've got, they left out Uzair Kassim, who I think was a top ball carrier in the Pro 14 last season.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can argue with the starting back row selection. As I said, I thought Blair Thompson, now he's fit.
He was excellent.
He was excellent. On yesterday, McLeod's on fire. And I think I like Callum Mahoney as well. But, you know, nothing against James Davis. But I just thought, you know, you're playing Munster and it's absolutely pissing down with rain. Sorry, I just swore. I don't know if that's going to count against you, but
as I've said a number of times, we've had David Bishop on this podcast before, so swearing goes.
Yeah, but you get my point. You would have thought that he would have gone for heavier carriers. I'm a huge fan of Lewis Rawlins, but I'm a bit baffled again why Tevita Atuva wasn't there. You know, a guy that big, that physical, could have made a big impact late on in the game. So it's a bit baffled with some selections, but it looks to me like the Scarlets are trying to play a power game. Now, as I said, the pack's improved, but I just thought there was no need for them to change their game plan away from the expansive game plan that, you know, was really successful when they won the league, but perhaps they were worked out a bit. All I needed to do was bulk up their pack and get a bit more physical. They've done that, but it seems like the game plan has changed a little bit. They're not really playing with two... they usually played under Pivac with two sort of receivers. They had a second receiver. They don't really play that at the moment. I just think they're a bit blunt in attack, aren't they? And you're not used to seeing that by the Scarlets. And that's something they need to sort out, because when you play reasonably well, and they did play well for a lot of the game, remember, and you lose like that just really knocks your confidence. You're better off playing badly and losing than playing well and losing. And they got a real tough run of fixtures. You know, Glasgow away, it's going to be really tough next week. They'll be up against it there. And, you know, there's other really tough fixtures coming up. So they're under pressure already, and they really need to sort themselves out. But as I said, credit to Munster. Great kick at the end to win it. But one point I'd like to make as well is Peter Omani. I mean, you know, the first yellow card, okay, you know, it's a physical game. But the second one, what a pathetic act. You know, the guy had already scored. Great refereeing, by the way, to allow the try and then obviously give the penalty rather than disallow the try. Totally the right decision. The guy had already scored. He could see he'd scored and he decided to jump in and try and hurt somebody with his shoulder. What a pathetic act. Pathetic act from, you know, Ireland's captain. And he deserved his red card. I got no sympathies. I just think... Yeah, we're trying to stamp that out of the game and he's going around needlessly doing stuff like that.
The thing I found strange, actually, about the refereeing decision is he awarded a second yellow rather than a straight red. And to me, that was a clear... Obviously, there's no difference on the night in terms of the result because it's a red card. But that was a red card offence. And I think, again, you know, when you're showing the game on TV, admittedly, probably to fairly small viewership, but... Nonetheless, I think that you're right. That's the kind of thing you want to stamp out, and that was really clear cut. I just feel like that was an opportunity to go forearm to the head. It's considerably more malicious than the Josh Turnbull incident, for example, Friday night. It, you know, there was a clear gap. Imani knew what he was doing there, and kind of thought, I don't really know why he thought he could get away with it. I'm a massive fan of Omani as a player. He's terrific. He's niggly. Yeah. He's hard. But that's coward. You know, that's a cowardly move to take a cheap shot at someone on the floor. You know, as I don't know. I'm sure from what I've heard, he's an outstanding bloke off the field as well. But he'll be bitterly disappointed with himself with that regard. And you know, it's definitely one where a ban needs to follow.
Absolutely. As we said, Josh Turnbull was... His red card was like an innocent mistake, wasn't it? Games played 100 miles an hour, you know... But Omani saw that his player had scored, then saw... I can't remember who it was. It might have been Jake Ball. And decided, I'd hurt this guy. You know, and obviously, you know, Van Graan and some of the Munster players would you know, they'd obviously defend him to the hilt. But, you know... If I was his coach, and he was my captain acting like that, I would make an example of him. I just think it was pathetic and dangerous play, and let's hope he gets banned for it. I'm not going to apologise for that. I think he needs to be stamped out of the game.
No, I'd absolutely agree with you on that. Right, let's finish the first half by talking about the Ospreys. I have to say, I haven't seen the full game, this one. I've only seen the limited highlights that are available, but massive result for the Ospreys. They had a much stronger side out on paper than they have had for a long period of time, but had to get the result and away to Edinburgh. You know, they can't hope for too much more than that, really.
Oh, they were outstanding. It's the best Ospreys performance since, well, for about 2 years, I would have thought. On paper, as you said, they had a really strong side out. You know, Ali Wynne-Jones and Tipperick both starting, which, unfortunately, as we've said on the pod a lot of times, it's going to be a rare sight seeing players of that quality in this league this season. But they certainly made the most of having their star players, and unlike the Scarlets. And, Edinburgh have been a really good side under Cockerill. They were missing a few players, but the Ospreys put them to the sword with ease, really. Maybe should have won with a bonus point. Their pack was excellent. I thought Webb was outstanding. He really was. Kieran Williams, if he stays fit, he's named on future international. He reminds me a bit of Scott Gibbs. He's not the biggest man, but he's so powerful, so explosive. He was excellent. And Matt Prothro as well. You know, is he somebody with an international future? He's great for Bristol. He hasn't really been talked about that much for international honours, and I don't think he'd be in this squad. But again, he's a guy. He's on the wing now. He's got great pace, great feet. But he stands a first receiver a lot. You know, he played a lot of most of his age grade rugby at 10. He had a fine game as well. And you know, Nicky Smith, I think he's playing really well. Best form he's been in for a very long time, for 18 months, I'd say. It was just an all-round really good performance. And I think the difference between the Ospreys and the Scarlets was the performance of their halfbacks. I didn't think the Scarlets halfbacks controlled the game well enough whatsoever. But I thought Webb, you know, we all know he's a great player. He was outstanding. And for me, he is Wales's best scrum half. I think he is in pole position to start for Wales when you know, in the big games. And Myler passed his best, of course, but can control a game, knows what to do, takes the right options, and what the Scarlets would have given, not that Dan Jones didn't play well, but what the Scarlets would have given to have an old head like that, that would have taken the right decisions under pressure and just managed the game when they needed to. And the Ospreys were superior to Edinburgh all round, and fantastic win, and obviously great to see them see them have a little bit of success after what's been a pretty horrific 18 months for them.
The halfbacks thing is so important. They have really struggled in that position over the last couple of years. I felt like Alan Davis was a good signing and a fine player, but he never really looked overly comfortable at the Ospreys, and filling Reece Webb's boots was always a big task. And they've not had a 10 capable of controlling a game. You know, Price didn't really work out for them. We've said before that getting rid of Sam Davis was a mistake. And although Myler is 37 or however old he is, he is able to control a game. So having that level of experience there is great. The thing that is frustrating, as you say there, and I think this is why I enjoyed the first weekend so much, is you had very strong squads out, almost across the board in the Pro 14, and that's what you want to see. Is you want to be able to watch an Ospreys side that has Alan Wynne-Jones and Justin Tipperick in the pack and the other internationals, and does have that class of Reece Webb in there in the halfbacks. But it is going to be a rare sight this season because of the extended international period. Do you think they'll be able to cope when some of these key players go?
Well, that's the key question, and I've been critical of the Ospreys' recruitment policy, on this podcast and in some of my articles. And I've said before, you know, they've got some great up and coming players. Their first choice team, as we saw yesterday, is very handy indeed. But maybe that middle tier of player isn't quite the standard that they need to make, you know, playoffs and whatnot. And I still stand by that. I think you know, they showed what they were capable of yesterday. And if they had that team every week, they'd be semi-finalists at least, probably. But I don't think they've got the strength and depth. I'm not saying they're going to be towards the bottom of the league like they were last year. There'll be big improvements. You know, Toby Booth's obviously big on culture and whatnot. So that'll be good for them. But I just don't think they've got the depth. And if you get injuries on top of your international players missing, which is going to happen to every team, you're in a bit of trouble, aren't you? And you lose Nalin Wynn, Tipperick. I think Nicky Smith's got a good chance of being back in the squad.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you're losing, you know, Reece Webb as well. And there are other players behind the scrum. But, you know, Owen Watkin as well. Who knows, maybe Kieran Williams. You know, you don't know, do you? He's certainly going to be a future international. I'm just not sure they got the quality of player required in that middle tier to mount a realistic challenge for the playoffs. Hopefully I'm wrong, but the jury's out, and that's going to be the test for them this season.
Nonetheless, excellent performance and a winning start. So they'll be very pleased, Toby Booth and his men. Right, we've still got loads more to get through. I'm going to look in detail at the upcoming Wales squad announcement, and we'll be doing that after this very, very quick break. Time now, Steph, to have a look at the Wayne Pivac's squad announcement. I mean, it's, again, testament to these strange times that we live in, that we've had one weekend of the league season and we've already got an international squad announcement. But a lot of international rugby to be played. We've got the end of the Six Nations. We've got potentially a game out in France and then the Autumn Nations Cup to come. So Wayne Pivac has got to name a squad here. How do you assess what he needs from this squad? Is this about blooding players, or is it about actually about getting out and getting some wins under the belt? What do you think are going to be those priorities for it?
Well, I think last week's announcement that Wales are going to be in the top seeds for the next World Cup, I think, could influence some of his selection. Because obviously, if they, after an indifferent Six Nations campaign last season, or is it the same season? I don't know.
It is the same, isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, after an indifferent Six Nations, I think, you know, if they'd lost a few games during this, this new competition, and, you know, obviously the Scotland game and France game, that, you know, they would have... They could have potentially faced the same scenarios they faced in 2015, being drawn in the pool of death. Obviously, they could still be in tough pools, but as it is, they're in a really strong position looking ahead to the next World Cup. So that takes a little bit of pressure away from Pivac, and you want to win every game you play, obviously. But I do think that when you look at Pivac, obviously he wants to play a completely, he might say otherwise publicly, but he does want to play a different game to what Gatland played. Mm. And this might give him a chance to try and be a bit more aggressive and get into that stage. And maybe there'd be a bit less pressure on results. There's never no pressure, it's Wales, isn't it? But, you know, it might allow him to maybe develop the game a little bit more. And by extension, it might allow him to blood a few more players. So, I, you know, as I said earlier, Shane Lewis-Hughes, maybe now he'll get in the squad because he's a player that could really be a star at the next World Cup, in my opinion. I think he could be there. I think the really fascinating one is, obviously, do they pick Callum Sheedy or not? If he accepts it, of course.
Well, that's the real question. That's the real question for me. I think if I was Pivac, I'd have been on the phone to him. I think he is... I think he's definitely good enough to be within that squad. It would be massive to lose him to England should England come knocking at some point. And I think if you look at the England squad, obviously they've got Farrell and Ford, and there's some really talented young tens out there in terms of Umaga and Simmons and some other players like that. But at the same time, it is pretty much open. And where there's a potential tug of war, I just think you've got to ask the question. If he says, no, I want to play for England, then that's fine. You've got your answer. But that would be the first thing. I think you've got to do that over picking, you know, kind of Sam Davis, who I like and is doing an excellent job for the Dragons. But we kind of know what he's capable of, I think. And who else would be in the running? But yeah, Jared Evans, likewise. I think, you know, I love watching Jared Evans play. He's a really exciting player. But do I think he's playing better rugby than Callum Sheedy at the moment? Not based on the rugby I have seen Callum Sheedy play. So for me, that is actually a really clear cut one. The answer is less clear cut.
I think if Pivak, obviously I don't know, I can't say for definite, but he's from Cardiff. If Pivak rings him up and says, I'm picking you in my squad, I don't think he's going to say no to that. Because if you look at England, you've got Farrell and Ford. You know, you've got like Marcus Smith, you've got Simmons as well. There are numerous other players around. You know, he's up against it, isn't he? I know Wales have got depth of 10 as well, but I just think if Pivak picks him in the squad, I would be really shocked if he doesn't accept. But I just think, you look at it, Biggar's nailed on.
Yeah.
Patchell, is he going to make it? I'm not sure. Probably.
Steph, you might be able to answer this one better than me. Because it's such a long period of time and, you know, a load of fixtures within there, and you've got kind of, I don't know whether, you know, kind of COVID and testing regulations will play any part in this as well. Does it mean that there's an opportunity to name an extended squad, or are there going to be players on standby? You know, I think the ideal scenario would be to have a bigger squad and release players back to the region to get some game time. But, I mean, surely across to some point in the autumn, if Rhys Patchell remains fit, he's going to be needed by Wayne Pillack.
Yeah, I would have thought so, wouldn't you? I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because I would have thought they'd be in their own bubble up in the Vale. So you'll have a bigger squad than usual. And I don't really, you know, the rumour is that the regions won't have their internationals until about April, which is pretty shocking, really, isn't it, if we're being honest. But, you know, that aside, I think he is going to name a large squad. I think Patchell probably will be there. I think you're right. I think I'd pick Sheedy. I think I'd love to pick Hardy Randall as well, but I think he'd play for England. But I think I've come to the conclusion, you know, Gareth Davis and Webber nailed on. A lot of talk about Kieran Hardy, Rodri Williams maybe. Hardy's the favourite to go in with Thomas injured. I just personally would look at Stephen Varney from Gloucester.
I would as well.
I think he's been outstanding. 100%. And obviously, you'd be taking him away from Italy. I'd select him as my third scrum half. And then, obviously, that would mean then that you'd have to go back and play in Wales. So you're out in the regions at the same time. So I doubt that lot, but that's what I would do.
But this is the other thing, is that tactic has, in terms of bringing players back into Wales to play, has worked. You know, we've seen that in terms of, you know, even Tompkins on loan. We've seen it with Rhys Webb coming back. Who am I missing here? You know, potentially Will Rowlands, we're expecting to turn up in Wales at some point. That tactic has worked. And I think, again, those 50-50 calls, along with players who could be eligible for other nationalities like Sheedy or Varney, I think that... you've kind of got to make the call, particularly in a weird autumn like this. Get them in the camp, get them to experience that sheer excitement, make up their mind for them, get them in that squad, get them excited about the potential to really pursue the dream of playing for Wales. And I think that it does a number of functions. It stops them playing for another nationality or considering that. And it also means that they have to come back to Wales to ply their trade. So, I don't know. For me, these are no-brainers. I'd be using it to do both functions.
I would as well. I fully agree. And you know, the fact is, both Sheedy and Varney on Hardy Randall. I think Randall will play for England, though. But
I do.
But I think, you know, if we look at Varney and Sheedy, it's not a case of capping them to keep them away from England or Italy. They're both good enough, aren't they? You know, in my opinion, I think they both got long-term futures for Wales. So I'd look at that. But I think looking at back to the squad, the centres are going to be interesting. I think, you know, you've mentioned Halaholo. I'd expect him to be there. Johnny Williams, do you think he'll select him? Because Hadley Parks has gone, right? He's not going to go back to Roberts, right? That would be a I like Jamie, but I think that would be a backward step. So Parks gave him go forward. Tompkins is an excellent player, but he's not the biggest. Johnny Williams, very physical. He was missed yesterday by the Scarlets. Can get over the game line. Good offloading game. You know, I just wonder whether he might, you know, and he was in Pivock as influential in getting him to sign for the Scarlets. In fact, he tried to sign him in the past when, you know, before he decided to come to Wales. So I just wonder whether he might be in. I mean, we've spoken about Kieran Williams, but I don't know whether Johnny Williams might be a bit more further down the line in his development. I don't know what you think about that.
I think that the front runner would be Johnny Williams. I think, like you said there, Pivac is definitely an admirer of his. I've not seen... I think he's been solid in his outings for Scarlett's last term. And, you know, the odd occasion where I've seen him play for Newcastle and weirdly seen him play for England in that game against the Barbarians. You know, I think he's an excellent talent and these are good options. If I'm looking at a player who I think has a real degree of X factor, and I think I'd be tempted to look at Kieran Williams. If it was me personally, I think Pivac will go with Johnny Williams.
Yes, it's going to be an interesting selection. As I said, I think as long as he stays fit, I think Kieran Williams is going to be a star in the future. But I think Johnny Williams has potential as well, so that'll be interesting. So I think, you know, if you're looking at uncapped players, Reece Armitt is nailed on, I think.
I think he has to be, he'll get his cap this autumn, and it'll be, you know, he's a wonderfully exciting option, and he's still so young, and the sheer just that volume of tries in the English Premiership is exciting, but his out and out searing pace. That's the thing that I think the back three is interesting. There's some 50-50 calls when it comes to wingers. That's why I would be looking at, yeah, so Reece Armitt is nailed on, but that's why I'd be looking at Hewitt over Steph Evans. Is, you know, I think Steph Evans is playing really, really well, and particularly the games at the end of last season. But I do wonder that in those outings he's had for Wales in the past, he's looked a little bit short of that out-and-out acceleration for international rugby. And I think Hewitt has that, and Hewitt has that that cutting edge finish to go with it too. So that's why I'd be going for him in that slot.
And in the back row, I mean, I'd pick Shane Lewis-Hughes. I think there's a good chance he'd be there. Josh McLeod is the other one, top more turnovers than any other player in the Pro 14 last year. Personally, I don't think he's going to be selected, if I'm being honest.
I
might be wrong, but as I said earlier, I don't think it's a reflection on him. I think he's good enough. I just think there's so much depth and competition. And as I said, Shane Lewis-Hughes brings something that other players in the squad don't have. But what McLeod brings is outstanding. I think he will get capped, but I just think he's going to have to bide his time. And then I just think you look elsewhere, and I don't really see any other new caps apart from maybe Halaholo maybe, and Johnny Williams. Sheedy and Varney maybe. But I don't think Varney will get there. I think it'll be Hardy, but it'll just be interesting to see what Pivac thinks, because in his Six Nations selection, he obviously picked a lot of English-based players over Welsh-based players to increase the talent base. And what you've got to remember is, as I've said, I don't think the 60 cap law is going to move. No. So I think by selecting English-based players, he's strengthening the pro size in Wales as well, isn't he? Because they're going to have to come and play for them. So
yeah, it's one of those perennial things that really frustrates me. And I know you're the same when you see it on social media and people say, oh, it's ridiculous, you should be able to play your club rugby wherever and play for your country. And the reality is we just cannot do that if you want to have a pro game in Wales. And the players have to play somewhere. And it is considerably harder if they play outside Wales to get access to them consistently for training. And if you're able to strengthen those squads and bring players back into Wales, then I just think it's an absolute no-brainer. So any of those 50-50 calls, it sounds ridiculous, but first up, you know, I do think you've got to consider the club situation. If Varney ends up coming back to Wales off the back of getting one cap for 10 minutes against Georgia, and he comes back and ends up, I don't know, he ends up with the Ospreys alongside Reece Webb, that is a good result for the Ospreys. It's a good result for Wales. It works all round. I just think these things, if you look at the big picture, it works.
And also, the other really strong strong sort of selection dilemma he's got is tight end prop. So for me, I mean, obviously Pivock wants a sort of Taniela Tupo style prop, doesn't he? The Tongan Thor. He wants props who can scrummage but are also really good athletes, great ball players, explosive carriers, and he's right to want that. But Dylan Lewis and Leon Brown could be that. They're fantastic around the park. Dylan is magnificent at the breakdown, but they are they're a work in progress in the scrum, and at the moment they're not quite there international level. Then you got Samson Lee, who I'm told that is the reason he missed the game yesterday was a knock to the head, nothing serious. So he'd be available. I just think he looks really good. He's the strongest scrummager Wales have, including Francis, I think, when he's fully fit. So it'd be interesting to see if he gets in there. And of course, Will Griff John, you know, again, could be another pub quiz question in years to come. You know, he got selected to start for Wales. And if you were picking this squad, he probably wouldn't be in it. I mean, he might be in it, obviously. But if I was picking it, I like him. I think he's a good player. But with Samson playing so well, and with Francis, and obviously Welsh-based, and with Francis...
he's not going to make that 60, is he? He's not going to make that 60 cap.
It's going to be... Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. And that's another thing. I mean, I hear a lot of people say that the 60 cap rule should be bent for Thomas Francis. What a load of nonsense. If you're going to bend, you know, they're saying, oh, it should be an exemption because of coronavirus. Well, what happens then in the future if a player gets injured, misses a season and doesn't make 60 caps? I mean, if you bend the rules for one player, you have to bend it for other players. And then you've suddenly got people knocking on Steve Phillips' door, the new chief executive, and saying, oh, you know, well, if he can play for Wales, less than 60 caps playing outside of Wales, why did you stop me moving to Exeter or to Bristol or Stade Francais or something? I just think that's nonsense. I just think we need to stick strictly to this law. And, you know, I think Francis losing him would be a huge blow, but I think you made a good point there. You know, will Francis be in the squad? I don't know. I think Samson Lee probably should be the first choice tight end. And on the loose end then, you've got Wyn Jones, who obviously ended Gatland's reign as the first choice, started Pivox as the first choice. Then you've got, obviously, you know, you've got Reece Carey, who's a huge prospect. At his best, Straub Evans is a fantastic player, and we know Pivock rates him, but he's been out of sorts for a while, hasn't started this season, and I think Nicky Smith has been outstanding for the Ospreys. Well, I thought he was Saturday night, so might Straub Evans miss out for Smith?
I think he will. I think Smith will get the nod there.
Yeah.
And I generally, on the loose head, I think it is it's a question of someone kind of managing the workload with Carey until he makes that shirt his own. He's a monster, and I actually think it was, I don't know whether it was a good thing or not, but he was ready to play a lot more rugby, and my understanding is he got frustrated and therefore took the move to Saracens because he felt he deserved more starts for Cardiff Blues, and I think he was comfortably good enough then. He's certainly good enough now, and I think that front row, he's going to be a feature of that for the next 10 years. And right now, at the moment, is he ready to start those big games against an England or an Ireland? I don't think he's far off. I certainly don't think he's far off, but it's kind of a question of managing that. So I think Nicky Smith is probably going to get the nod over Rob Evans. Wyn Jones is a solid, dependable prop who has proven he can scrummage really, really well at international level and be a really good. I love the fact that he's continued to improve his game, and you know he's a no frills player. But I think that's a good thing, and that should be rewarded. And he can do a job within the squad. I think his form is perhaps tailed off a little bit in the wake of the World Cup. But nonetheless, I'd be looking at those three. And just to go back to Tighthead and to the squad in general, for me, if I was in charge, I'd name a massive squad, and Woodgriff John would be in it. And I'd give him 20... I know this sounds horrendous, giving caps for the sake of caps, but let's be honest, some of these test matches are test matches for the sake of...
And I think he's earned a cap as well.
I think he's earned a cap. He was named, he was named to start. If he starts against Georgia... And it means he's got to come back to Wales if he wants to play for Wales again. I don't see that as being a bad thing. Again, someone will end up with a very good massive tight head prop. So it's a weird thing, and certainly on the Thomas Francis thing, I wouldn't bet the law whatsoever. He's been an excellent servant for Wales. He's not clearly not been massively keen on coming back to Wales, and he took the chance of extending his contract. And isn't going to be able to make up those numbers. And yes, it's extenuating circumstances, but not enough to waive it, in my opinion.
If Francis wants to stay at Exeter, that's fair enough. Mm. Absolutely respect that decision. But if he wants to play for Wales, then he should have signed for a Welsh region.
Mm.
That's the making an exception for one player. It's ridiculous. It's not fair on other players who have turned down big money to go to England and France. And to stay in Wales to play for Wales. And Rhys Webb, I thought it was right that he wasn't selected for Wales. I might have been in the minority, but I thought he was right. But Webb decided then, right, I actually want to play for Wales, so okay, I'll sign for the Ospreys. I think there are circumstances like Thomas Young, who I think is a terrific player, who apparently, and I think this is accurate, wasn't offered a contract by Welsh side. So sign for Wasps, I think he should be allowed to play for Wales. But if Francis, but also there's a difference as well, when you've got to be careful with that sort of talk as well, because when you're a player, your agent could say I'm not saying that this is the case with Young or Francis or anything, but you have to be careful with that as well, right? Because your agent could ask you, do you want to go play in Wales? And you could be like, no, ideally I want to play, stay with my English club, but want to play for Wales as well. And he said, right, to see what I can do. Then he can price a player out of a move to Wales. And then he could, I'm not saying this has happened, but I suppose it's not as cut and dry as what I'm saying there about Young. I've been thinking about it. But my point is, if Francis wants to play for Wales, he should sign for a Welsh region.
I think it has to be black and white now, and I think it's even the Thomas Young, I don't know the ins and outs of my understanding is he wasn't offered a contract, but I don't know whether that's whether he's been priced out. I certainly think that if you are allowing a grey area, agents will get hold of it. It's as simple as that. They're in the business to make money, and it's a business for them. It is not a question of the long-term health of the Welsh side or the region. So the more you can alleviate agents occupying that grey area, the better. So for me, it's very, very simple. If you don't have the requisite 60 caps, you have to play in Wales. And I just don't see any exceptions, really, whatsoever. And the fact of the matter is, we had this in the past. We had this halfway house, and it didn't work. What was then called Gatland's Law, rather misleadingly, it never really worked for this very reason. The 60 cap rule has worked.
And what really annoys me, right? I look at social media, I probably shouldn't do this. Every time if we take Wales Online or the BBC and they do a story on the 60 cap law or some player affected by it, and then you look at the comments underneath and I want to throw my laptop out the window. And you get these people and they say, I understand, fair enough, they don't support any of the Welsh pro sides, fine, they don't support Wales. But they like, oh, it's weakening Wales, this and that. Don't they see that the main reason this law is here isn't actually to strengthen the pro sides? It does do that. That's not the reason for it. The reason is to keep Wales competitive at test level, because Pivac now has over 90% of his squad available for all training sessions. You know, he doesn't have to send players back on fallow weeks, etc. This law isn't actually there to strengthen the pro sides, even though it does that. That's just an added bonus. It's here to strengthen the national side. Mm. These people can't see that. It's blatantly obvious and they can't see it. And it's 60 cap law is one of the best things the WU have brought in, or the PRB then have brought in. So, we've probably I probably diverted this this conversation away from the squad. But, I think it'll be interesting to see if he does pick Francis.
No, it'll make sense. I could still see him pick again. I just can't see a situation where because what is it 52 caps he's on, something like that.
Yeah. So how many internationals have we got this year?
Bloody loads. I think that, you know, in theory there could be a way of him sneaking it, but I just don't think you can as a tight end prop. I can't see a way that happens. I will do a more extensive homework on that and let you know whether there is a way of doing it. I think he will be planning for life after Francis, but at the same time I think he's going to want him in the squad just to utilise him throughout.
Just one more thing, your comment on Rhys Carey, I fully agree. I think he's a great prospect and neck on the line here. Brahim, I'm going to say that he's going to be in the next Lions tour. I think he's a great prospect. Gatland likes him. Perfect to face the South Africans if he's played more test matches by then and he's matured. I think there'll be a few wild cards on our tour and I think he'll be one of them. Luke Cohen Dickey will be the other one.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm a big fan of both those players, actually. Right, let's finish, Seth, just by having a quick look at the Pro 14 fixtures for next week for the reasons. So Dragons at home to Zebra. You mentioned when we reviewed the game out in Dublin that they need to be judged on the games that they need to be winning. Well, Rodney Parade against Zebra, that's a game that that Dean Ryan will not only be targeting, he'll be expecting a win there.
Yeah, as I said, you know, going back to my other point, you know, when you're promoted from the Championship, you don't need to beat your Leinsters or your Man Cities. You need to beat your, you know, the teams around you, and Zebre are one of those. And the Dragons they'd be challenged physically in the front five, but I think all around the park, it would be pretty poor if they lost that game. So I'm going to go for a Dragons win there.
Okay, I'm going to do the same. And yeah, I don't know. Dare I say it? I actually think we might. Yeah, I think that might be a good victory, a tight arm wrestle, and then actually a few things to get us excited. There we go. A bit of optimism from me on those rarest of occasions. Ospreys versus Ulster. Ospreys obviously will be looking to follow up that one with a win, but Ulster, it's a stiff test. Whatever time of year you play them, how do you see that one panning out?
It is a stiff test. I don't think Ulster have been playing well recently. I think they obviously were, you know, they did well to beat Edinburgh in that game, but I think Edinburgh lost that game, that semi-final, as much as Ulster won it. Leinster beat them pretty easily. They got, you know, absolutely slaughtered by Toulouse. So they're a good side, but I think the Ospreys are favourites. I think they've got a good chance. You know, it's all about momentum. They should have their internationals next week if they can pick the same team. It'd be a tight game. But yeah, I fancy the Ospreys, so I'll go for the Ospreys there.
Cardiff Blues versus Connacht. I think this is a tough assignment. Even though it's at home, pressure's on for a win, and Connacht are a tough, tough outfit.
Yeah, Connacht are really dangerous this season, aren't they? Because obviously, like when they won the Pro 12 during the World Cup, you know, everybody lose their internationals. They lose very few. And I think it'd be tight, but at home, I just fancy Cardiff will. Well, I say at home, it's not in the Arms Park, but I'm.
Of course, it's not. Yeah,
I'm going to go for Cardiff win there. Narrow win.
So far, Steph, we've got 3 wins out of 3 for the Welsh regions, and then Scarlets go away to Glasgow next Sunday evening. Will it be 4 from 4, or is that going to be an assignment too far?
I think. This is probably the toughest assignment for a Welsh team this next weekend. I think, as I said, there were a lot of good in their game against Munster, but I think when you lose games like that, it knocks the confidence from you. I don't think Glasgow are that good either at the moment. I think what the Scarlets have got in their favour is they've got a really strong pack and they have got quality in their team. Hopefully Patcher will come back into it, which will help. They've got a reasonably decent record up in Glasgow. They won there last season. That'll be touch and go. I'm going to say that the Scarlets will bounce back and win. But there I'm not confident.
Well, I like the thought of four wins for four Welsh regions. I'm not sure in the 4 years I've been doing this podcast that we've ever come on air and had to report that. So we'll see whether that's the case or not. It's definitely great to chat to you. Got through loads of stuff there. Some really interesting stuff to chat through. We will be back to chat rugby with you very, very soon. Obviously, we've got a huge season of rugby ahead. So make sure that you like and subscribe to us, however you get your podcasts. And if you've enjoyed listening to this, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Big thanks, as always, to our sponsors at So Coffee Trades. And one final thank you again to Steph. Right, we'll be back to chat rugby with you next week. Podcast Network.